friends, and welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Adam Stoker.
Hi, Stuart. How was your Memorial Day?
It was loud. Yeah, it was. We have a bike week here in Muller Beach on Memorial Day, so a lot of bikes. But I also had a graduating child, so we had a graduation party, and we did it at the Comedy Cabana, which is a comedy house here in Muller Beach, and we themed it out. We printed AI posters all around with the kids. It was my son and four other boys, so we made them the stars. But then we actually hired a real comedian, but we didn't calculate the fact that some people would bring their young children, and the comedian was a little bit risque. So a couple of the grandmothers weren't too impressed with us, but everyone said it was the best graduation party they'd ever been to. So
okay,
it was a win, net win.
Give me the most unruly joke you're willing to share.
Oh no. No.
The best part is I can.
Hold on 1 second. What happened?
Oh no, I can see the punchline in his brain that he's not willing to share.
Can you introduce our guests? Because I just lost sound real quick.
Yes, I can. Okay. Dan Hollowack and Jeanette Rausch are back, and we are so excited to have you guys back. We had an incredible conversation last time you were on the show, and really excited to dig even deeper into some of the AI conversations that we were having.
Let's do Perfect. It.
Awesome. I'm back. I can hear you guys. We're good. Sorry, technical issues. Yeah, we are. This is exciting. And you know what's interesting is the episode you guys were in just launched like a week ago, and so already getting some great feedback on it. But there is a hunger for people to get more practical with AI. They want to understand, you know, how can it better be used to improve the quality of their work or the efficiency of their work. And so I think today's we're going to get real tactical, really tangible, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But you know what has to happen before we get into that, right? I mean, there's only one thing we can do. But Adam, I'm sorry, my friend, as is tradition with Jeanette, she brought her own jingle with her. It's time.
I'm taking a break.
It's time for Stu's News.
You know what? You've well earned it. And I just realized I shared again without sharing sound.
Damn it, Jeanette.
Right?
I know.
Like it's all brand new. Okay, here we go.
Dan's got the keys now. Jeanette's got the script.
We're seeing a brand new screen.
Dan's sitting in the cockpit. Yep. The power has shifted.
Dan, you hear it?
Stuart and Adam, yeah, they've kind of
excluded
drifted.
You. This is just for me.
I guess so.
Stuart and Adam, good? Just watching from the sidelines.
I love this Zoom setting.
Is this Stu's News or the Jeanette and Dan Hour?
Stu's News, news coming to your door. Stu's News, Stu's News, and a little bit more. Oh, Jeanette and Dan are taking the floor. Does anyone remember who hosted this before?
Wow. I feel like this is a hostile takeover.
I'm just glad the desks got moved.
Yes.
Did you see that little post-it note that was on the back of the chair? It says desks moved. And I have no idea from a context perspective what it had to do with anything.
Does it matter? I think you're focused on the wrong thing here, Adam. She just literally said she's replacing us. She and Dan and Jeanette are replacing us.
We had a great run. Apart,
you know?
Yeah, there's no AI. No AI is going to get by Adam. He knows that he notices every little detail.
Oh, man, Jeanette, outdone yourself. I appreciate you. Well, this one's kind of irrelevant, Stu's News. So I subscribe to a newsletter called Mindstream, and you can get it. It's at mindstream.news and just subscribe there. It's actually, I think HubSpot bought it fairly in the last year or so, but every day they give you like news about AI. They give you a couple of interesting like, tidbits, some tactics, but they also do a poll. In this week's poll, or today's poll that I got, was really fascinating because they basically asked, should there be more restrictions on AI? And are they basically running amok? And should we put more constraints on them around ethics and things like that? And remember, this is a cohort that is very pro-AI. They're subscribed to a newsletter specifically for AI. I would say these are early adopters. These are enthusiasts. These are the people that are as pro-AI as you get in a cohort of the population. And 92% of them feel like there should be more regulation. And that's bonkers to me in a world where 92% of people do not agree on anything anymore, right? To see 92% say there should be more restrictions on AI is bananas. So I just want to throw that to you guys. And we've talked last time you guys were on about like the backlash of AI with the younger generation. And I think this is another symptom. There seems to be this anti-AI sentiment, even amongst the people that are using it most. So Adam, I'll let you chime in first, and then we'll let our guests chime in.
Well, this is actually a really interesting Stu's News, and
As opposed to all the other ones.
yeah, I mean the other ones have been really brutal, but
Kind of dull,
this one was interesting. But I'm really just seeing a lot of chatter out there in addition to what you shared with me. I mean, you and I highlighted on Stu's News 1 week, and I can't remember if it was during this episode with Dan and Jeanette before, where we talked about the woman who was giving the commencement speech and she got booed in the speech. There's been now like seven other ones, including the founder of Google getting booed in his commencement speech. That he gave to a group of students. There's also a lot of people who are pushing back against data centers, right? And data centers are critical to the continued growth of AI. You've also got a lot of people questioning this utopian projection from a lot of the AI leaders that are saying, oh, no, don't worry. You're going to have universal basic income, right? So everybody's going to be rich. And I'm like, yeah. For the first time in history, the people who capture all the value are going to share it with everyone else. And so I think a lot of people are seeing all the writing on the wall here of the different things that we're being told are going to be a net positive for society, and we're starting to look at it and go, is it? And I think that's exactly the uneasiness that I think there's a huge PR problem just from an AI perspective in general, that the AI leaders have not done a fantastic job of educating the public on what it's actually going to do to benefit society as a whole. They're focused on, prosperity and all this, which I think we all want prosperity, but purpose, if you look at human just behavior, purpose is much more powerful than prosperity. And so I feel like there's been a lot of issues with the way it's been communicated, and that's resulted in a lot of uneasiness around all the different components of AI.
Yeah. Jeanette, where do you land on this?
Man, it's starting to make me a little nervous about the next time I do a keynote at like a state tourism conference, because a lot of the speaking I do, it is to, it's at an AI conference, right? Where everybody in the room is friendly to what you're talking about. But every time I speak at a conference and we, do Q&A at the end of the keynote, I always get a pointed question about, exactly what Adam was talking about. And I'm a little nervous that the next time that I do one of these, that the room is going to feel empowered to start booing, or to be like the shift feels like j just really in this graduation season feels so much angrier and more pointed that it does make me a little nervous, and not from a standpoint of not being able to, have cogent responses to the points that people bring up. But, going to the poll itself, I think there's a distinction between wanting regulation of AI and being against AI. And
For sure.
like, I think regulation is definitely needed, because otherwise the people who regulate it will just be, the people creating it. Like, who gets to say what is okay and what is not okay to release? Is it the
Make the
CEO of the
rules and then play
company?
by
Right,
them.
exactly. So, like, there's always some kind of permissioning, inherent in just what do you make publicly available. So who gets to make that decision? And should it be, the democratically elected, officials, or should it be the billionaires?
Well,
And
and then you're
yeah.
just looking at the US, right? What about globally,
Well,
right?
that's
Because one of
true.
the
You look at
arguments there is, well, if we regulate the US, then we're going to be at a competitive disadvantage to China or India or any other place. Dan, where do you weigh in on this?
Yeah, no, I think, well, Adam, I think it was really, really well said. I think you hit on a lot of really important points. And I feel in a similar way. I also agree there should be more regulation. The speed and kind of unchecked kind of speed of this is really scary. I also don't think as a, well, for me as a consumer of it, I have to admit that I've come to really enjoy using AI. And yet, if it just stopped here for like a while, that would be totally fine. Like, we already have so much at our disposal that is so powerful that they've done studies of just how much there's still such a gap between the capabilities of AI and what companies are even able to harness. And it's a big gap. It's like 70, 80% of the value we're still not capturing of what AI can do today. So if we could just put on the brakes now for a while and really think this through, I would be totally supportive of that. But as you said, Stuart, like when I a while ago when I read the AI 2027 like report that came out a couple of years ago, which is like a bunch of lead researchers came together to basically write a bit of a fiction nonfiction like a direction of like where this could go in the future. What I really took away from that was the arms race problem. And when you realize that the people at the top believe that we're in an arms race with other countries, that's when it hit me that it won't slow down. And even though the leaders of many of these platforms have said that they think it should go slower, they think it's dangerous. You've heard from like everybody has really at one point or another said there's danger here and we should be going slower. They're not, because they've ended up in a competitive race against themselves, in North America, and then now in a race globally. And that makes me kind of fearful of how fast it can end up moving.
I mean, we've heard recently with the some of the latest updates from multiple different companies where they can't release them publicly because of the risk, right? There was Anthropic that said that it had exposed tons of vulnerabilities in banks and other things. So they're
Which
giving,
brilliant marketing, by the way.
Oh, yes, it
I
was.
mean,
And some
which
people
they
say that, right?
their propaganda is very good, right? They're very good at hyping up, but. Yeah, I don't know that there's a way to stop this. I think the fear of the competition from other countries in America is so big that it's going to be impossible for anyone to really put their neck out there and say, we're going to take a stand. And we realize the existential threat that that creates. We'd rather go on this path of a different existential threat that we're at least in control a little bit. It's crazy. I agree with you, Dan, to a point in terms of if we stop now, there's so much we can do today that we couldn't do even 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, or let alone 6 months or 12 months ago. But this, I'm still running into frustration where I'm like, oh, if you could just do this little bit more, like just this little bit more, it would be game changing. I'll give an example. I was trying to automate my process for publishing this show this weekend. I was playing, I published the last two episodes, and I created a skill in Claude to cut my time by like 15, 20 minutes from a, it's like a 40-minute process to edit, publish both audio and video. And I cut it in probably half using a skill to automate some of that stuff. But it's not at a point where it can edit. It doesn't have taste, it doesn't have discernment to do like edit the actual video where I need it edited, or the audio and stuff like that. And then I also ran into a file upload limit with Claude Chrome extension as well. So there's just little things where I'm like, oh, I could, if this could just do this one extra thing, it would save me an extra 20 minutes. So I'd love to see that, like, let's go another year before we hit pause. But I get your point. And I think to the discussion around why what we feel like we're at this watershed moment with the backlash, especially the booing at commencement speeches. Well, I think we've already hit that tipping point in the narrative, right? Where now the 4-year degree students feel like the world has let them down. We see that their unemployment rate is higher than the folks that didn't go into higher education. We see that their just prospects for getting jobs are almost zero without a lot of AI skills. So they feel betrayed by a system that promised them the American dream. And so, of course, they're going to be angry. And then on top of that, there's all the propaganda out there. And whether you're a conspiracy theorist or not, it's very apparent that there is counter narratives out there that are anti-AI, whether that be from foreign countries, whether that be from established power structures that are incentivized to not let AI take away their power. there are definitely people at work to try to create some of this dissent that's going on, especially around the data centers. So it's crazy. It's a
Yeah,
crazy world.
I put myself in these kids' shoes that are graduating from school right now, and the American dream historically has often been sold around home ownership, right? That you get your plot of land, or you build your house, or whatever it is, and then that's your it's yours, right? And if you look at what the promise of AI is, if universal basic income is what's coming, well, this generation is already shut out of the housing market and thus not able to achieve the American dream. So the promise of universal basic income from the leaders of AI, what they're basically saying is that that proportional divide is going to be there forever, because if everybody's making the same universal basic income, who's going to progress? Who's going to move up
Right.
the
Who gets
social
the house?
ladder? Yeah, and these kids have got to be looking at this going, yeah, I don't care how rich you say society is going to be, my place in society is going to be fixed from this point forward. And that's the narrative. Like, you've got to show this generation what their opportunity for progress is going to be if you want them to embrace AI, if you want them to participate in the society that AI is going to be a major factor in. And I just don't see, from a communications perspective, even a path to that right now. And I'd really love to see a lot more communication from the AI leaders in the space of how the younger generation is going to be able to map to progress for the American dream. That would just be an incredible
Yeah.
thing for me.
Well, the problem is folks are talking about this utopian future where we have creature comforts, right? Maslow's hierarchy is taken care of. But to your point earlier, Adam, it doesn't give us a sense of purpose. It doesn't give us markers for success and differentiation. And, as humans, we're objectively in a better position today than we ever have. Abject poverty is decreasing every single day in the hundreds of thousands, according to UN statistics, right? And so we have so much. We live better today than kings did 150 years ago, right? Like, there's no question that objectively we're very comfortable relative to our humanity for the last hundreds of thousands of years. And yet, objectively, there's more stress, there's more mental illness, there's more turmoil, right? And so that's going to get worse. If everyone's the same and we have no control over where our station is in life or what success looks like in our life, that perception is going to get worse and worse and worse. So we got to figure that piece out. Like,
Like,
the
let's
purpose
hope
is
like the
important.
arts are the solution to that, right? Like, as the
Potentially,
Broadway
right?
person, it could, if we wanted it to be, I think that could be, because like that's the ultimate like individuality and differentiator is how do you explore the arts in your own life? How are you supporting them, with your attendance and visibility?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, we sort of all gone on the negative side of AI. Let's go on the positive side for a bit. So last time we just ran out of time. There was so much we wanted to talk about with AI and how we're currently using it and what the opportunities are. To Dan's point, if we're only using 20% of the functionality now, let's try to get the DMO world to 50% now or 70% now, because there are opportunities. I certainly know within my team, and I'm sure we're a little more progressive than others. So what are some things you guys are doing? I'd like to start talking about voice, how you're using voice control with AI, specifically things like actually controlling and instructing AI, orchestrating AI, but also workflows for using tools, whether that be Granola or Claude or things like that. And let's just keep in mind, some of our audience are not familiar with this stuff. So let's be real specific and explain. We're talking about a specific tool, what it does, and why it's valuable. So Jeanette, I'll let you kick it off.
So I use a tool on my computer called Monologue. I think it's not one of the most popular tools, or probably Whisperflow. Monologue is from a company called Everi, Everi.to, and they are a media company, like an AI first media company that also is creating AI tools. So they have a really interesting business model. They do a lot of great writing. And so one of these tools that they created will make a transcript of, what you say to your computer. And everything that I have read said, like, this is talking to your computer is the future of how we are going to interact with our computers. Like, keyboards are going to become obsolete at some point because we talk so much more quickly than we type, and AI performs better the more context you can give it. And so we have to, and I am struggling with this. I so prefer typing to talking, and I forget to use the monologue tool like constantly. So what's kind of getting me into the habit of it again is doing staff trainings where I'm doing live prompting, and I will stop myself and say, oh, okay, I am going to talk to the tool instead of just typing into it because nobody wants to watch me type because it's so slow. And then when other people in the staff trainings are sharing their screens, and I'm like, okay, no, see that little microphone button? You can press the microphone button in Claude. Make sure you are pressing that microphone button. And again, it's like it's so awkward, but you realize you don't restrict yourself as much in, oh, does this sound good? Oh, do I need to fix that typo? Like, no, you never need to fix the typo. And it gets you over this idea that there's a perfect prompt to write. There is no perfect prompt. There's only enough context. And so teaching people that there is no magic, like the world that popped up around prompting is a skill that must be taught and download this prompt library. And it's all just such a lie. And it's not, if it was ever needed, it is not needed anymore.
Can I ask you a
So that's what's
question
exciting. Yeah.
on that, Jeanette? So you said that you use monologue, and then you said hit the and by the way, I haven't used voice to run AI nearly at all. So this is a learning question for me, but how do monologue and Claude interact with each other? How do you leverage or do they? Are they separate?
They're separate. It's honestly for monologue, you press a button that's like always open on your computer. And it starts making a transcription of what you say. And
And then
then
you
you
feed the
paste it in
transcript.
wherever. And then
Got it.
it goes to your clipboard and then you paste it where you need it.
Got
So
it.
like Claude, if you're using the desktop app, there's a little microphone in the prompt box. So you can just press that microphone button.
Yeah.
But if I'm using VS Code, it doesn't have that microphone button. So you need an external tool.
Yeah. And ChatGPT has the same one. And what I've done with my phone is map the action button on my phone to ChatGPT. So when I hold that down, it automatically goes into voice mode to ChatGPT. So instead of using Siri, I now use ChatGPT to ask my phone questions and it has a proper
And your phone's
conversation.
finally smart.
Yeah, for
Finally.
sure. Better than it was, right? Than Siri. So Dan, do you use Whisperflow? Is that what you mentioned earlier? Or are you familiar with that?
I mean, and the thing is, like, dictation has been available on all of our computers for a long time, actually. It's just been like pretty bad, because the dictation that probably comes on your, Windows computer, your Microsoft PC, or your Mac is, again, it's a button you can have turned on and you can speak to it. But it adds the ums and the ahs and the ifs and the ands and the and it gets things wrong all the time. People's names of companies, names of projects. So when AI dictation came along, Monologue is a great tool. Like there's one person at Every who built Monologue on their own because they were so passionate about it, and it's beautifully designed. I happen to have used Whisperflow, so I've been using that one. They're both very similar in their capabilities, but some really clever things have been done here. One of them is when you start dictating, it takes a quick screenshot of your screen. That means that if you're dictating into an email or into a Slack message or into ChatGPT, it already knows the words on the screen. So when you say someone's name or the name of a company, it just gets it right because it knows the context of your workspace when it's actually writing the text out.
Oh, that's
That's
cool. Does
amazing.
Whisperflow does that? Does Monologue do that too?
I don't, not to my knowledge, no.
I'm not I don't know for sure, but
Yeah,
and you
I'd
don't
have
have
to.
to
Maybe it
paste.
does. I
You
never
don't
even
have to
thought about
paste
it.
this back into like a field. You can, wherever you put your cursor and you activate monologue or whisper flow, the output of what you say just goes right where your blinking cursor is. So, yes, like Claude and ChatGPT have the little microphone built in for dictation as well. But if you use monologue or whisper flow, you're not confined to just the Claude box. You can dictate anywhere on your computer, which is for the average person, 3 to 4 times faster to speak than to type. And because it's doing really light, rapid AI processing, you can do little corrections. I could say, like, hey, Adam, let's meet for coffee at 4 p.m. Oh, I mean 5 p.m. And it's not going to write 4 p.m. Oh, I mean 5 p.m. It's going to fix all of that for me. So you just get clean output. And once you hit a certain tipping point, like I've become almost most of my day is voice to the point where it's annoying my wife quite a bit. Because if I'm like working in the dining room or in the living room or something, she'll be like, oh, what? And she's like, are you talking to AI again? I'm like, yeah, sorry.
You should say, just assume I'm always talking to AI unless I say your name
I'll
first.
say your name first.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I've always gravitated towards voice to text in I've used audio, I use screen readers too because of my visual impairment, but I haven't found the workflow, especially with email. Like I spend a lot of time composing emails and so if it's a complicated email, I'll go to AI and I'll think out loud a little bit with AI and then copy and paste. But I think I'm at the point now, especially listening to Whisper Flow's context thing, where I might start putting the reps in because that's what it is, right? We got to just train our muscle memory. We got to break 30 years of typing with our fingers and replace that with speaking with our voices. If we were designing computers today with this technology for the first time, right? If we wouldn't design keyboards the way they are, we would be communicating with our mouth. So it's definitely us humans are the roadblock to this adoption. So I definitely think Whisper Flow is a great, sounds like a great option, something I'm going to commit to trying for
Me
sure.
too.
Yeah, the interfaces are changing, and I even as I see like our son grow up, I'm wondering like what his relationship will be to a keyboard because he'll probably interface with technology using voice in the coming years, and then maybe he'll need to learn how to use a keyboard to like edit the output. Like I guess the keyboard will still be relevant for probably editing things quickly or changing up text, but I think the first draft will be voice-based, whatever we do.
At some point they're going to look at a keyboard like the kids today look at a cassette tape or something. They
Or a
sort of,
typewriter.
yeah, they sort of
So, I
know
mean,
what it is, but don't
they're
really
still
use it.
teaching QWERTY keyboard like quick ass, so like the quick brown fox. Like I don't know. You remember getting taught how to where to put your fingers?
Yeah,
Which is
Mavis Beacon is what I used to learn to type. It's amazing.
Like the design of a keyboard isn't even like good for typing. It's meant to slow you down so that the
The
typewriter,
keys didn't get jammed, right? That's
right.
the story I heard. Yeah, for sure. Let's flip this. Let's talk about meetings. Like so we sort of talked about email, which one of the time sucks in our world, right? The other is meetings, right? And it's sitting in a meeting, taking notes while you should be paying attention, but then following up on a meeting and making sure everyone does what is decided in the meeting. So let's talk a little bit about this. And Jeanette, I'd love to for you to talk a little bit about your experience recently at IPW, because I know Bob and Diane from my team spent some time with you there. And Bob came back super excited about granola and how he's going to develop a whole workflow for our team. But you want to talk a little bit about just step by step, like how you use these tools to record meetings and then follow up on the meetings?
So we actually kind of rolled this out across the entire Brand USA staff that were attending IPW and taking meetings. So everybody had Granola downloaded on their phones, with the exception of, I guess they don't have an Android app, which is dumb on their part. But so the person who had an Android used a Plod Pen, which is a physical recording device. I also have one of those, and I really like that. So you take these devices, you get permission and record the meeting. And then when you get back home, you have like a summary of the meetings. You can ask Granola or Plod to create a summary that meets specifications that you give it. So it'll go through the transcript and you say, this is all of the information I need you to pull out in the summary. In granola, if you want to look at the transcript, it exists, but it's a little bit hidden. So it's, you are just getting a summary. You aren't getting a word for word every off-topic thing that you talked about. So you can look at the transcript to confirm that something was correct, but what you end up with is the summary. With Plod, you tend to get, like when I export from Plod, it's the actual transcript. So it's the complete record of every single thing that was said. At Brand USA, we are now taking these transcripts and we're having everybody upload them into a Box file because Box is our file sharing system. You can do that through Claude. So Kat Palmer on our technology team created a skill in Claude that will, you can upload all of in a shared project, you upload your files to that shared project and it will save the files in Box. And then because it's everybody doing it, let's say it's everybody, on your leisure sales team uploading their meeting notes or transcripts to one place. That means you can then go back to this shared project in Claude and ask questions, and you're going to get answers that aren't just about your own personal meetings. It's going to find trends and answer questions across every meeting that the team had. And like this is something if like I attended IPW, for 2 decades selling Broadway shows. And if you wanted to find out, oh, but were there any themes from, Brazil that we should, float up to the CEO so he's aware of what's happening? That would require a lot of conversations. And now you can, and it would rely on our memories. And it would rely on, did you actually write that note down? Or did you just kind of at the end of the week, you're like, huh, I feel like Brazil came up a lot and I don't remember, what the gist of that was. Well, now you can really dig into all of those little details. And so we are going to use, this system. And there were people who said no, they didn't want to be recorded, which is fine. You just upload your handwritten notes. You could take a photo of handwritten notes if you want to and upload those. And then it's, create a report for Fred by market on what are the most surprising things we heard at IPW. Or, what, give me a list of all of the follow-ups that I need to send. Our media team was using this, our communications team. So like they can do the same thing across, what questions did we get? Give me a list of every single question that was asked, grouped by theme. And you could then turn it into a, HTML page. So instead of reading a summary in an email that's all text, you get this beautiful visual way of sharing information, right? Which is one of the most amazing things about websites is that they are good for communicating information in a rich way. So that's what we've been working on.
Dan, how about you guys? Are you using any of these technologies to record meetings and following up on those?
Yes, yeah, we have been. I'm curious that the Jeanette, are you using the granola connector to Claude and the box connector to Claude to pass
Oh,
that
yeah.
back and forth? Yeah, it's smart. Okay, it's a great idea. Yeah, we've got our granola connected up to our Claude and ChatGPT accounts as well. But yeah, our whole organization moved on to granola about 6 months ago. We ended up getting like a promotional offer or something. It might still be out there, but where you can get onto the business plan with granola for 1 year before, having to pay any licenses and stuff. But having the whole team on it means that you have your own private notes, and then you can have team-based notes. And you can push your notes, elevate them to team folders so that everybody can search across that. But there's something that like granola invented that I'd never seen from any other meeting recording tool ever. And it's the fact that you can still take your own notes while it's operating. So when you run granola in a meeting, it could be a team meeting, it can be a customer meeting, it could be anything. Granola opens, and granola is just listening to the voice that's coming into your computer. It doesn't know who's talking. It just knows that there's a voice coming in, and there's your voice going back out. And that's how it builds the transcript. but it also gives you a notepad. So often as we're in a meeting, we think of things that the AI doesn't know. You're like, oh yeah, like I need to remember to follow up with that person, or like, oh, this would be a great idea actually for this project that I'm going to talk to Jane about. And so you make little notes to yourself, right? That AI doesn't know. It's not in the transcript. So then when it's done, it takes your notes, it takes all of its AI notes, and it merges them together. And it shows you in darker font where what it got from your own personal notes, and in lighter font what it learned from the transcript, so that you basically feel like you've got this like superpower kind of note taker that's complete. You don't have to have, Adam's personal notes over here from the meeting and then his transcript notes over here, which is how we've all lived for the past couple of years. We've had like the transcript notes and your own notes in your little Apple Notes pad, or your, any little note tool that you're doing. And so we were living in this world where like our context was split. So Granola brings that together, and then you can search across all conversations you've had with a person, all conversations you've had with a company. It's really like it has become something that in our organization, we run it on all of our internal meetings, to the point where we're in an internal meeting, we're like, okay, well, Granola's got this. We'll like transfer that into a spec afterwards, or and then it connects up to your other tools as well. But to me, like, I think that just very human interactivity of being able to take notes in concert with AI has been very powerful.
Yeah, that's AI, the promise, right? It's the augmentation of humans. So it's the technology doing the boring, laborious stuff, but we're still making decisions and have the human side of knowledge that we can add context. Now, does it, when you write a note, it knows as a timestamp when you're writing that. So if it's relative, you're writing a note that's relative to what's actually being said right then, it knows how to match those two things up, I would assume, or not.
I'm not sure about that.
So it'd be interesting because then you could say, hey, the person talking right now is Adam. And then it would know, okay, this is what Adam said.
Yeah,
as
this
we've
is the
started.
really smart thing that Adam said.
Absolutely. Well, that's why you'd have to say it was Adam because AI would never assume it was Adam if it was smart,
Oh,
right?
Lord.
But one of the things I've been thinking about is like, just does it change that language within meetings a little bit? Like, should we develop a specific operating procedure within a meeting? So for example, if we recorded board meetings, which there's some questions around whether that would you should record board meetings. I tend to lean towards yes, you should if you're already taking minutes and if you keep it private and like if there's a motion, then someone would go through Robert's Rules of Orders and say motion. But we don't always say, okay, this person made the first, this person made the second. Someone's jotting that down, maybe, and maybe with your what you're told with Granola, you could do it. But maybe you change protocol to where the person has to say, I second, and then says their name or something like that, right? So you have a log of it. Or if there's an action item, you specifically say, this is an action item. So you're almost like referring to the AI to let it know specific things that you want it to do rather than
We
just
did that,
inferring some of
yeah,
that.
at IPW. I said, now Granola will connect to your calendar, so it will know who the meeting was with at a meeting. But I said, when you start the meeting, just for extra clarity, like say the name of everybody at the end of the meeting, just like you should anyway, recap the action items and the next steps. But here, do it because that will, Granola will infer it, but let's be
It's
specific.
better to have the clarity for sure.
I'll say
So
in the
I
Claude tool, just to, sorry to plus one something that you were asking about with the notes to a timestamp. The Claude recording device is amazing if you go to conferences because you can record the sessions and there's an app on the phone. So you can take, like, do you take pictures of slides that you want to share? You can take it inside of the app, and then it is mapped to the time in the conversation where that slide was up.
Does Plaud have a connector to Claude
It's
at this point?
it's not native, but yes, they have an MCP server.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so you can connect the two.
Yeah.
Because I fell prey to the thing where when I first got my Plaud, I have the flat one, the credit card size one like this. I'd record a bunch of meetings and then inevitably I'd get busy and I wouldn't do anything with the notes, right? I wouldn't store them in a specific place. I wouldn't go through and extract the to-do items. I'd rely on my old habits. And so now I think now that there are connectors and you can automate some of that stuff, like I could literally make it to now where I doubt like the Claude, this is going to get confusing. So with Plauds
I
and
know.
Plauds.
I hate
Yeah.
how people market AI and
I
brand their
know. They try
products.
to all be an open claw, right? And so anyway, but you could record a message or a meeting. It automatically gets connected through Claude to download, and then it automatically processes that and adds tasks through Asana or whatever your project management system is to the right people, right? That's all possible to set that up as an automated workflow now.
Yeah. And now that you're talking through it, I'm wrong. I don't think there is an MCP server. So I built out a workflow where after every meeting, it downloads and saves to a Google Drive. And then I have to run a Plaid skill that I have connected. And now I do it. It's just part of another skill that I run when I start my day where it looks for any Plaid files that were added the previous day. And then it organizes them by the person. So Claude, you can assign speakers, which is a really nice, and so it'll recognize voices, which for your
That's right. It says
interview
speaker one,
example.
speaker two, and you just name them. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's really interesting. Go ahead.
Was gonna say one of the practical examples of how we've been applying it more recently with customers is just like thinking creatively about all the value that comes out of those meetings, right? You hold those meetings and there's actually so much richness, right, in that like context. And we've like all these transcripts have typically just they usually just sit there. With one of our newer solutions, Collaborative Planner, where like destinations are planning their entire content plan over months and months, we tried something where destinations already have a content planning meeting typically. So they sit in the room for an hour and they talk about the plan for the next season. And they talk about what should be in the newsletter and what events are coming up and what partners should be featured. So we said to one of our destinations, we said, can you just record that whole meeting? Give us the transcript. And we took the transcript, we had their entire content plan mapped out for the next 3 months based on that meeting. And their feedback was, they're like, holy smokes, you're like 95% correct. Like you got the nuance of a bunch of things we didn't really expect that you'd be able to figure out from that transcript. And imagine the time it takes to go from that meeting to document the entire plan and each piece of content and everything it's going to go out on. But to have it all just like rolled out after the meeting from the transcript, it just takes this whole, it kind of closes this whole gap to being able to execute after the meeting finishes.
Yeah, I mean that's the promise of AI, and that's how I think, Jeanette, last time you were on, you talked about we're going from AI being a place we go to and then come back to our work to AI being the place we do our work. But it's really close already, but there's going to be a world where we're doing nothing laborious at all. Like AI is taking care of all the manual, menial stuff in our lives. And so we need to be identifying that, really thinking about throughout your day, what am I actually spending time doing? Where is my focus and my input going? And what of that can be replaced by AI? Right now, it's probably 50% of your time, if I'm being generous, right? I think it's probably more than that, but through skills, through other stuff. And I really didn't understand the power of skills until the last 2 weeks, where I've started building multiple skills for repetitive tasks to just simplify things a little bit, and I'll run them. Like I'll give you the example for posting this show, right? I used to go to ChatGPT and I type in a prompt every time it was in a project, but I'd be like, "Here's a transcript. Can you come up with show notes and subject or type titles for the show?" And then I'd have a conversation back and forth with it. And then I'd decide on it, and then I'd have to copy and paste that, and then I'd go to Photoshop and I'd create the title card, but that was in all caps; it wasn't in lowercase, so I'd have to retype the title. So there's a lot of the like just 5, 10 second increments of copying, pasting, typing back and forth. Now it's a skill where I literally just drop the VTT file, which is the transcript file, into a folder, and I have a skill where I just type in the episode number, and it automatically creates all of this stuff. I don't have to have a conversation because it has all the context, all the history, all the stuff. And then it's actually now using Chrome to go in once I've uploaded the videos and name and schedule the episodes. So like all that back and forth between browsers and ChatGPT has just gone away. It's automatic now. So it's crazy. So we need to be looking at that for every single thing we do. How can I automate that? Because the technology exists today.
I also would suggest for anybody listening, if there's tasks that you do on a repeatable basis, schedule those tasks in Claude. I mean, every week when I open up my computer, I've actually built a live artifact, and I don't know how much you guys have dealt with artifacts, but it scrapes my Gmail, my Slack, my LinkedIn, and gives me a to-do list for people I need to respond to and all the different things that I've committed to do that I haven't yet done. And I check it off as I get it going. So now my to-do list lives within my Claude account. And that live artifact has been really valuable to me. And of course, I've had to go back and forth with it and optimize it a little bit, but it's been excellent, and it's kind of changed the way I think about starting my week.
Well, I stole, Dan's workflow that we talked about on the last time we were on for researching conference attendees. And so I'm going to a Google summit next week in Boston. And I took the face, like they sent a PDF file with pictures and a brief bio for everybody attending, which I gave to Claude Code. I'm like, all right, I want this turned into, I want to know who I should meet and kind of the priority of who I should talk to, but I don't want to just read it in text. Turn it into an HTML file. And I'm horrible at remembering people and their faces. So also add in a flashcard system that will quiz me using a timed repetition to start to learn who are the actual people in the room. And when
That's
it
wild.
was researching everybody, again, like it goes through your email. I've now become very disciplined because it doesn't take any work of giving stuff to Claude and saying, make a person markdown file for each one of these people. So it's reading those files and saying, oh, this person will be there. You did these two events with him recently. So clearly, this person very well. It found our head of technology had sent me somebody, some organization's AI playbook. It's like, oh, I think this is interesting for some other things we're talking about. Well, I'd saved it in Claude. I'm like, this is interesting. Just, go through, pull out the stuff that I should know about and make a company file about this. Well, somebody from that company is actually attending this summit. And I had
Oh,
already
wow.
forgotten that I'd ever read or uploaded this particular document. And it was like, oh, this is a top
You
priority
can join
person for you to
dots,
talk
yeah.
to. Yeah, it's joining dots, which is that's what AI does. It's an algorithm that finds patterns.
And that's where we're seeing benefits and breakthroughs in medicine, especially in science in general, where it's going and looking through old papers and studies and it's
Who
joining
cares
the
about our
dots.
dumb use cases like marketing? Who cares? Like
No,
cure cancer.
it's curing cancer, exactly. And what's interesting about what you did, Jeanette, is you only have to do that and train it once, and now you can just say, "Hey, Claude, make this a skill for every time I attend a conference, and I'll give you a different file, but it's the same workflow, right?" And so now you've trained your assistant on exactly what you need when you're going to a conference, and you just have to put the input in. So you've gone from something that would have manually taken you literally days to now repeatably it can take you seconds to generate this information. That's the promise of AI if we use the tool for more than just writing smart emails that actually make you sound dumb because you use the word genuinely 50 times a day now, and which you never say
Yeah,
genuinely
you
in
want to
real life.
sharpen that point, right?
Yeah, and just to remind everybody, like everyone listening too, if we're talking about skills and things like this, these are just text files. If you can write instructions into a Word doc, you can write instructions as a skill. And when people say markdown, it's just a, I don't know, it's just a
It's
piece
a
of
file
text.
type.
It's a text file.
It's
It's a
just
text
fancy
file,
text.
essentially what it's
Text
saying.
file. It just so happens that you put a hashtag or pound sign to indicate if something's a header, and you put little stars if something's bold.
But you
But
don't even need to worry about
you
that
don't even have
because
to worry
AI
about it.
does it for you, right?
Yeah,
You
AI
just say,
does
"Hey."
all. So
That's the thing. Like anyone that's intimidated by this, Like there's millions of videos on YouTube, or just talk to Claude, right? It's the first technology that can teach you how to use itself. So just have a conversation. Tell it your fears. Like if you're nervous about something, if you're unsure about something, have a conversation. Go get Whisperflow. You don't even have to type. You can just talk to it like it's a person, and it'll step by step walk you through it. Like there's no excuses anymore. If you're not all in on AI in terms of improving your efficiency, then you're not doing the best job you can for your constituents, for your stakeholders, for your community at this point. Every DMO should be fully embracing this, looking for opportunities where they can do more with less, become more efficient so they can spend more of their time building relationships, thinking, strategizing, the stuff that AI cannot do for you. That's where you should be spending your time. You shouldn't be spending time in your email inbox doing laborious research. AI can do that for you today, and
And
it's very, very cheap.
I think based on what you're saying, what you would say to those kids who, at the beginning of the show, we talked about they're booing AI, just ask it to tell you everything's going to be okay, and it'll do that. Is that your suggestion?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said, Adam. Good job paraphrasing.
AI isn't going to take everybody's jobs, but it can take the shitty part of your jobs. Let it do that.
Yes, 100%. It'll take the stuff you don't like, outsource it to AI, because you can, and it's cheap. We had this I know we've got to wrap up here, but we had a philosophical discussion in-house recently about, what's the appropriate investment in AI tools for our team, right? And it's not cheap anymore. If you're spending $100 a month for just Claude, right? And then you add like a $14 a month granola or whatever, you could be two, three, 400. And then if it's a developer, it could be thousands of dollars a month in tokens. But at what point does that not make sense, right? Because if one person can only do one unit of work, but AI can make that one person do three, four, five units of work, then isn't that the cost of AI worth the same or more than the cost of the human? And so are we heading down the road where in the future our AI software cost is as much as our labor cost? It's possible, right? It's probable, in fact, at some point. So I think that's where the market cap for AI tools, which people are saying they're never going to be able to hit the kind of revenue they need to get the return for the amount of investments we made. I disagree, because we've gone from spending zero on AI to $100 per person minimum in just a year. And it's probably going to be 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 a month on these people very, very soon. So I think the run rate could be super high. And Anthropic is proving that right now with the growth they're seeing with Claude. So go embrace it,
Maybe
guys.
we don't need Word anymore, and we can get rid of the
Yeah.
Microsoft Office suite. I don't know what their subscriptions are.
Now we're talking.
Yeah,
There you go.
but
Maybe.
everything is AI. Turtles all the way down.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah, I
I'm
mean,
sorry.
Elon says there won't be apps anymore, right? So,
Yeah.
all right, we got to run. I know, Jeanette, if people want to find you, where can they do that?
LinkedIn, or it's J Roush, ROUSH, at thebrandusa.com.
Or any convention or conference ever in the DMO space. Jeanette's probably there speaking. Dan, if they want to find you, where can they do that?
Yeah, I'm also easy to find on LinkedIn, or just reach out to me directly, dan.holowack@crowdearth.io.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. Adam?
Adam at thebrandrevolt.com. Find me on LinkedIn or, of course, on Tourism IQ.
And you can find me at Stuart Butler on LinkedIn, or stuart.butler@visitmuntabeach.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and definitely leave a review. We're going to read reviews on the next episode. So if you get them in time, that'd be awesome. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody. Did you need me to stay on? Say something stupid?